This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, January 31st, 2007.
Okay. So 4:45, call this meeting to order. So first of all, we'd like to welcome the new faculty members of the University Assembly. So if you could please go around and introduce yourselves. Over here.
Elizabeth Sanders, and we have one of these cards.
Abe Strook. I'm an assistant professor in chemical engineering. No card either. Maybe next time.
You'll have them for the next meeting.
There was a membership, right?
Dan Brown.
Okay, great. We'd also like to welcome our new clerk, Diane.
Hi.
She's helping us this semester. So, are there any additions to the agenda that aren't on here? Okay. So, first, we are just going to quickly go through and do reports. So, basically, we've just been discussing the campus code and getting feedback and working with the CJC in terms of leadership and the direction the UA will go in this semester. Do you want to do the GPSA and everything?
GPSA, working with the undergraduate assembly or the student assembly, finally got ratified that out of the two boards, these one will be designated, one for the undergrads, one will be designated for grad students. That just happened, I think, sometime last week. And next week, the GPSA will be having their semester retreat. So what's about it?
Just to clarify, that was for the student trustee seat. One graduate. Leon, do you want to do anything? Okay, Rodney, do you want anything from faculty?
No, I don't. I don't go to the faculty senate.
Okay.
So you go to the faculty senate?
Yeah, I don't have anything to say.
Okay.
The two students that sit on the board of trustees, it used to be just two students, whoever got elected. Now it's going to be, one will be designated for undergraduate students, one will be designated for graduate students. Something that Janet's been working on a lot, I know. I think some other people, Doug Maritonda, but it's something that I think Janet and Kwame really picked up this year, and they finally were able to work through with the powers that be to make that happen.
So that is in effect?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to take effect this year.
Just to make sure that there's always a grad and always an undergrad to make it equal. So next we're going to hear from the Code and Judicial Committee about the updates of the Campus Code of Conduct, and also just to note that they're holding a forum next Monday, the 5th, from 4 to 6 p.m. in Willard Strait Memorial Room. So, Marty.
Picking up on the reports of the four constituent assemblies, graduate professional, faculty senate, and the employee assembly. I just want to urge the chairs of, or the representatives to this body, or those of you who reported or who are designed to report, whether you're chairs or not, to get your assemblies vigorously involved in providing, in marshaling comments upon the code questions and judicial system questions, and registering those comments in preferably the form of the website, which has places for comment on all of the different proposals that are made in the Kraus report, and then possibly in the forum. And I say vigorously because a sort of significant part of our charge to the committee was to gather campus opinion. And while we have had a nice batch of opinion already submitted, it's pretty clear from some comments that are made both in the editorial of Sun and people's responses at the most recent meeting of the heads of assemblies this morning, that there still is a rather large gap of understanding of what's going on in the student body as a whole, and maybe in the university as a whole, though I think other sectors of the university might be better informed than the student body. And what I mean by saying vigorously involved then is that, I mean, we're happy to take the opinions that we have already, and there's a nice slice of student opinion, though it's obviously a minority of a tiny number of students that have expressed their interest, their opinions. We're happy to take those and construct a report that will reflect that opinion and then will reflect our comments on that opinion. But it seems to me that it's going to have that much more power and strength than you're going to have as a university assembly, a lot better job, easier job to present your report to the president if you have, if along the line a larger body of student opinion is forthcoming. Now that said, I want to say that we're doing all kinds of things to gather opinions, both just off-the-cuff opinions, ones that maybe are only based on part of the reading of the situation or aware of only part of the reading of what's going on, and more educated ones. And the off-the-cuff one is perfectly happy to consider. It's our opinion, taking one possible off-the-cuff opinion, one possible off-the-cuff statement, that is, they're trying to take our rights away, that statement, which is off the cuff, in the sense that it doesn't really look at the process. It's our opinion that our job as the CJC is to gather campus opinion about the various aspects of the Krauss report and its impact upon the code and judicial system, and then pass that opinion on to the UA, which then will make a report to the president that will say what are the strengths of the current system, what are the defects of the current system, and what might be acceptable or unacceptable in terms of implementing things that are suggested in the Krauss report. So there is nothing at this stage that we feel is involving anything to take away rights. That is, we're not at the stage of taking away rights. That stage comes later, when the UA makes its decision and the president acts upon the decision or doesn't, or the president takes a separate course of action entirely. So that's the informal, I guess you could say, uneducated opinions, and I'd love to have it that people know more about the process, and I think maybe the forum will help that. Yeah. The educated opinions, just to report on what we've done, we've had two meetings since the last university assembly meeting. At the first, we had a representative from the central administration office of policies, which, if you read the Krauss report, was the agency under which the code would be ensconced or placed, should it be taken away from the university assembly. And that's an office that is run in the central administration to rationalize policy across the whole university. Whatever. I mean, we had a report about what that agency does. It's completely independent, one could say, of any student input or staff input or anything else. It's all entirely a administrative body that takes policies and thinks about their rational implications and how to implement them in the university fabric. And so we had a report upon by that, a representative of that office on how the code might be examined and implemented, one could say, through that office, should that come about, if the Krauss report were implemented and that provision of it were a part of the implementation. I'll report briefly on that report to us, which was if I can paraphrase the person, we don't really have any idea of how this could happen. And so it doesn't become relevant for us to consider it until some tremendous steps are taken to change the code and take it out of your hands. That portion of the report. So, but it was useful, and it was communication with the administration about its intent should changes take place. At our second meeting, Mary Opperman, who is the director of human resources of she's also the vice president for human resources, came and spoke with us about the splitting off of faculty and staff adjudication of the code from student adjudication, student management, and what would be the impact upon the Office of Human Resources on that process, how it might be affected. And she, to paraphrase her again, she didn't like to say that it was problematic to institute that kind of a system, but she said she couldn't imagine how it could happen because it would involve each staff or faculty dean or supervisory unit to take on the job of administering individually the adjudication of the punishment of the offenses under the campus code. And so she just needed more clarification on how the system could be standardized so that there wouldn't be inequities in enforcement of the code side of things for faculty and staff in different areas of the university. And then those are the contacts with the administration that we've had formally in our meetings, but frankly, I'm responding to something that somebody said that it was a consequence of the meeting this morning with the chairs of the student senators that represented the code. They said that we aren't engaging the administration enough. I got Scott to say that the code news committee invites every member of the former working group to come to every meeting. And Susan Murphy and I have been in correspondence, and she's regretted she hasn't been able to make them. She will be at the forum, but I've sent her minutes of our meeting. And she's the sort of central player in this. Bruce knows about all the meetings and is, as he puts it, willing to cooperate in any way that would be necessary for us to publicize or to make opinion.
From what we could tell, definitely some members of the administration will be at the forum.
Yes, of course. The forum is useful because it will get more campus opinion input. As far as what the Coast and Judicial Committee is doing, it's digesting that. It's considering these opinions. I think that it's really useful to have written form, and that's why I direct your attention to this. This is the document that comes out of the website that you have right there. Comes out of the website. These are comments thus far up to, I think, the 29th of January that have come across the website. One last aspect to my report is to talk about the question of what the Codes and Judicial Committee has decided to focus upon, and I brought this up at the last meeting in the UA. Of the 8 or 9 points that the Krauss report zeroes in on, we have chosen to focus upon 4, actually, 4 condensed into 3. 4 of the Krauss reports condensed into 3. The first one is to whom the code applies. This means faculty, staff, students, or faculty and staff. This is not the code itself, pardon me. To whom the adjudication process of the judicial system applies. That is, the code should apply to everyone. The Krauss report advocates that as well. But in the Krauss report, the adjudication is separated out, as I mentioned with Mary Opperman. This is a connection with Mary Opperman's visit. We are asking faculty, staff, students to comment upon whether it's a good idea to separate the adjudication process out or not, so to whom the adjudication process applies, whether it should be all under the same rubric. Second, in the second part of that is where the code applies, meaning off campus as well as on campus. And in this regard, I can ask you, how does one define off campus? Because how far does off campus extend? Does it extend to Fort Lauderdale? Does it extend to Paris? Does it extend to your home city as well? Those are things that we'd love to have comments on. That's the first one. The second one is, who's in charge of the code? Is the UA continuing to be in charge of the code, or will the code be directed by the central administration? And that's why it's important to get the Office of Policy over, because that's the office which would control the code in that case. And the third one is, should the judicial administration be independent, or should it be under, for students, the Dean of Students Office? And uncertain, the Krauss Report proposes supervisors and dean's offices to be in charge of faculty. Any questions?
When the two VPs came to your meeting, weren't they extensively canvassed by Barbara Krauss before she wrote her report?
You know, I don't know, because the first one wasn't a VP, it was a representative of the office, but somebody who was, you know, deeply involved in implementing policies, and at least evaluating and implementing policies. And she was she looked through it and she said she was happy to have, you know, a positive mention of her office, not that she wanted the extra work or anything, but that she didn't understand how it was that it wasn't clear how it was that it was in factored into the policy determined. Because what they do simply is take a policy that's given to them, determine whether it is egalitarian, I guess you could say, and how it should be applied across the campus. They're, in other words, the word facilitators of some sort. And she didn't want to deal with specifics of the code at all in the process. She didn't want to, so her role then would have been just to, the office's role would have been that just the sort of monitoring of it and in some way maybe amending of it, whether amendments come from them and how they would be implemented, the amendments.
So,
as far as Mary Opperman was concerned, for example, take the question of we asked her the question: what would happen if, for example, whatever office was established under the Dean of Students Office to handle student violations became also the office to handle the faculty and staff? And she said, "Well, it could be done," she said, "but that could be unusual or something." But she saw, you know, it would be unusual to have a faculty staff questions handled in the Dean of Students Office. That it would be, you know, awkward, let's put it that way.
So this is a very blunt question. From the administration, that the representatives of the administration that showed up to your meeting, did they seem to have any interest in the code, implementing the code, and were they, did they seem to interest me, have been consulted by Barbara Krauss,
okay,
contributed to it, and
sure,
have thought about it, and think, yes, this is a good change. We want to take.
Okay, there are two things I should have answered. I'm sorry. At our first meeting last week, at which the Office of Policy Administration person was there, Ken Hubble and two other representatives of the Dean of Students Office were there too. I apologize for not telling you that. That's very important, because Ken Hubble said that the following: he has been up to this point is very happy with his role in the whole office's role as an advocacy for students, advocates for students. And so when he first heard of this possibility, he was troubled by the possibility he would have to be both an advocate and a disciplinarian. And then he, however, turned to the external review of his office, of which we have a portion of the copy of it. At the external review, which was done by two deans of students at other universities, one at the University of Pennsylvania, the other one at Stanford, I believe it is, the recommendations were made, and I think these are public records, so you can see it, but that because this office was in such high favor among students now, it might be a nice opportunity to move disciplinary function into the dean of students' office. So it's an opportune time. Those were the words that were used by the dean. Because it said that a lot of modern thinking about discipline on universities is that it should be done possibly through the dean of students' office. Now, Kent read that and he said, well, I thought about it a bit, and I thought, well, there are ways in which I could be of good service to the students should the disciplinary function maybe be merged, but he's not certain how that would, he's not certain how those things would play out, and he's not certain, you know, he wasn't going to be advocating it at this point, but just could clarify that. He sent us a report, so I can't say, and then Carol Grombach, who is a new member of the Dean of Students Office, was also at our meeting, and she said that she felt more or less that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And although she saw possibilities of some helpful ways in which the Dean of Students Office could administer discipline at the same time being a good advocate, it might be good for in some ways, possibly, but they have to be argued to her in three ways. Right now, she thought, you know, it was good to have an independent sighting of the office. There was a third representative of the student's office there who subsequently sent me a long memo or a memo asking me was I aware of the Judicial System Association of Judicial Administrators, which is a major professional organization, and it has lots of these student's offices in it. And I became aware of that, and then I, this person had been, prior to this time, a judicial administrator in a dean of students' office at another university, and just come on to campus, and felt that, you know, we should be apprised of all of those opinions in that association newsletter and in their publications and so forth. And while we did do a survey of 10 universities, the Office of Assemblies helped us by surveying judicial systems in 10 universities around the country. We haven't done that professional association linkage. We haven't spent a lot of time looking at that. Now, my point in bringing up all this is that there is obviously some interest in some quarters of the university administration in thinking about reforming the system to make it modern or new, or the newest ideology on how to advise, how to discipline students. But it hasn't yet come to us, and I wrote this back to the individual who wrote to me from the Dean of Students Office saying, we would really be pleased if the specifics of what would be beneficial for Cornell in that change would be articulated in written form in response to the layout that we have on our website, which is looking at specifically what is achieved, what can be done that cannot be done now with the current system for the bettering of the campus climate should that happen. We haven't had those responses. If you read through these responses and other communications that we've had, it's been 99% against all recommendations in the draft report.
Will there be somebody at the forum that I have the same feeling that there's 99% feeling against the Krauss report, and maybe 99.5 if you add the day hall people that came to your meeting.
Right.
So will there be somebody at the forum that can try to convince us otherwise, that the Krauss report really, that we're dumb, and the Krauss report is really a brilliant piece of legislation?
My opinion on that is, and that was brought up in the somebody sort of prepped me for this meeting by saying that saying there was some misunderstanding among students or so, some people at the assembly's chairs meeting about, we're trying to put over this thing on everybody, and somebody should tell us what's good about the Krauss report. My feeling is I don't think anybody on the committee has the responsibility of doing that and shouldn't be asked to do that, because we're gathering information from the campus. We know the code really well.
Oh, I agree with you with that. I was wondering if Barbara Krauss or Hunter Rowling, Susan Murphy
will be at the, not that she necessarily will be a spokesperson for telling us what's good about the Krauss report. I don't know. But it was
not so much as what's good about the code. It was just, why would these changes be proposed? What aspect would they benefit the community?
Those are two different things. Why they were proposed, I can tell you from having read the external review of the Dean of Students Office and the external review of the Office of Judicial Administrator. There were two external reviews done 2 years ago, and both external reviews proposed the movement of student judicial practice into the Dean of Students Office, and the external review of the Judicial Administrator's Office goes so far as to give almost all verbatim the recommendations that the Krauss report gives. Curtailing of rights to remain silent, I can list them out, but almost all in the external review. So why they were proposed, I think partly has to do with that. But the rationale for what's good about them for Cornell, I think, has to come out of community discussion.
Okay.
And indeed, both of those external reviews do say things of that sort. They say that the university community must determine whether these recommendations can be workable and relevant to Cornell culture. Now, this is thanks for giving me this opportunity. This is very important. The university community is you. It's the university assembly. And all the people, students, faculty, staff, who worry and complain about this as the abrogation of rights and all this other stuff, have a responsibility to talk to you folks and get to you, and you yourselves have the responsibility to apprise yourself of all the issues, because what's going to come to you is the past of deciding whether these are appropriate to Cornell culture.
Can you speak your name quickly so that the...
A. Strook. Could you clarify the extent to which we or your committee within the UA will be truly responsible for selecting these or making decisions on each one of the points? Because you said you were going to focus on these four big topics, but they're all of these detailed topics.
Right.
That all these detailed points in the report that somebody's going to have to say yay or nay to. What is the process forward in terms of actually once we're educated by the community?
If you read President Scorton's second letter, he says that he wants a report on the code by such and such date you guys would present to him. And if things need to be extended beyond a certain period of time for whatever purpose he happened to, he'll entertain that as long as it's now. We looked at all the recommendations, and this is part of our previous meeting that you just joined now. So we looked at all the recommendations and we said, take right to remain silent. Right to remain silent is an important component of various areas of the code as it presently stands. We know from our experience, and collectively, Kathy O'Rourke and myself have 20-some years' experience on the Code Judicial Committee, that processing changes to the code in a way that's responsible to the Cornell community takes discussion and debate. In the Code Committee, in front of the UA, and then it goes to the administration. That's the way that in 1960s, when this whole system was created. So we said it would be irresponsible of us to say that we're going to be able to pronounce on all these issues by the date that we're required. required to do. And the most salient issues were who the code covers over. The second of those issues, that is, who's responsible for the code, it seemed to me, and us, all of us, took out of our hand the dealing with any of the other issues. Because should you decide that the central administration is responsible for the code, then they'll decide who, whether the right to remain silent is decided. Why should we make any recommendations to that? So these three are prime ones, and we'll recommend to you something based upon campus commitment. And then you, if you put a recommendation before, you say that, you know, this, if you want to continue to be responsible for it, we expect that over the next year or however, we can process any number of possible changes suggested to us. The changes come from people who have legal experience, like, for example, counselors, counsel's office, or the judicial administrator's office, different sectors of the community, even from the student body. For example, if you want to have legislation on Haiti, you would propose something to CJC. CJC would vet it, would talk about it, it would then put it in the form of resolution that has the council of the JA's office involved and even the university council to a certain extent. It would come before the UA, and then I expect the same would occur in the case of right to remain silent and so forth.
Excuse me for this interruption, but we do need to move on. If we have time at the end, we can come back to this. But okay, Leon, you can
just
comment.
Real quick. I'm not sure if this is just for clarification. If CJC is a year behind on this, or if the date March 7, 2006 should actually say March 7, 2007, where it's on page 3 and in the table of contents. I'm guessing it's a typo, but I don't know.
Where is that? Right. The way it's after she's
right.
Service.
No. Is that in 2007?
I don't
know. Yeah, it's supposed to be 2007. I don't know why it's that way. Well, I have to change it in the website. That's where it comes from. Is that another place where it's actually
in the table of contents?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
That's something. Amy, could you tell Ari about that?
I will.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, great. That's Thank it. You very much. Okay, so now we need to move on to new business. Basically, one of the biggest things we need to do right now is appoint a transportation advisory chair. Basically, the committee has not been operating last semester, and the GPSA really, really needs it to go. So we need to appoint a chair of TAC right now, and basically, you need to pick a day when the first meeting will occur. You basically need to cover, you need to, like, watch over the committee. You need to report back to us. So are there any nominations or anyone willing to chair?
Does the purview of that committee include parking?
If it's not on the description here, then probably not. Wait, does it?
I thought it does.
Does it?
Has anybody ever been on that committee? Have there ever been
on
that committee?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got learned saying I was on the several months ago. I've never heard about any meetings or...
It's because we have not convened it. That's why we need to do it right now. That's why we need a chair so the chair can convene the meeting and that we get it operational right now. So that's it's usually been fully operational by itself this year. Unfortunately, due to our lack of involvement, it hasn't been as it should be. So that's why we're trying to start it again for the semester and make sure it gets active.
Is there any indication what the charge or authority or... What does it have any? In other words,
we had this is last academic year, not the fall semester, but last academic year. Parking was a major issue. We had 3 open forums on parking and sustainability, but that was last academic year, not the fall, but last academic year. So there were open forums and there were some things.
So do they have the authority to say yay or nay or whether it's parking or sustainability, or is it just to
I mean, the committee itself does not have the authority to say parking lot can go in or not, but it can bring back proposals. It's a committee of the UA, so
right.
It can bring back proposals, you know, coming to the full assembly.
It'll bring back here and then we'll vote on it. We're basically the liaison as well as you watch over all the meetings, make sure they convene, that type of thing.
And then just once the UA votes on something, that is a non-binding recommendation to the administration, or is that a binding recommendation to the administration? Like, so if we vote on something and we go to the administration with it, do they have to act on it? Or do they then just take it as a recommendation that hopefully reflects the university?
They have to act on it.
There was at one time in the history of the institutions, I understand that there was a division of authority between the administration and the university assemblies. So certain things were put under the purview of the university assemblies, but certain things were under the administration. And these are, for reading the history and looking at these committees, these are kind of like the ghosts of what was once the university assemblies' authority. In other words, they had absolute authority over the health senate. Back in the 70s, you know, they can make a decision, yes,
right,
we will distribute contraceptives or not.
Well,
and somewhere along the line, either by default or by action, somebody started assuming that the administration had authority over all these things, and suddenly the university assembly's authority became advisory. What I'm curious about is was that done by trustee legislation? Was it done by custom? Was it done just by the university assembly and their committees just ceding authority to the administration because they weren't that interested in it? This is confusing for me. That's why I asked the question. Because, you know, we have this committee that I suppose we've been on for months and they've never met. Is it because they have no authority and people are just not interested?
It's because we haven't appointed a chair who has declared the first day.
And the Krauss report is really taking over,
right,
your agenda.
That's why we need to appoint a chair today.
I think Ellis would say that we have legislative authority over all those things. So legally, Ellis, the faculty chair, that however, if there wasn't enough interest in a certain subject, nobody took the power away, but we didn't act on it. So if you were to become chair, whoever is to become chair, and you want to be proactive, and you make a recommendation, the UA passes it, the president has to do something about it. He can reject it, but he has to write a response why he's rejected.
If he rejects it, does it go directly to the Board of Trustees then, or is it not to be considered by the trustees?
I don't know.
I mean, do we have direct access to the trustees originally in the university? Do all of our things now have to go through the administration? I think that's kind of an important question. The trustees are the authority, neither us, the ultimate authority, neither us or the administration.
To respond to what you were saying earlier about these committees becoming ghosts, that's why it's also next on the agenda for today, is that we've realized that we've lost touch or they've lost action, and that we need to appoint chairs to all these committees and get them back going. So that was next. We want everyone here to look at this handout of the descriptions of all the committees, and we need people to step up and say that they will make sure these committees convene, that they will go to the meetings, that they will report back to us to make sure all these things happen. We realize that we've lost touch with all of them, and we're trying to start it back up this semester and start getting back in contact with them and start making sure things happen again.
Do you want the reading of the charter for those committees? What it says?
That would be great.
Protect in itself, it says, TAC shall consist of 13 voting members, 8 are community members, 2 undergrads, 2 grad and professional students, 2 employees, and 2 faculty members, appointed by the representative assemblies to serve a 2-year term on a staggered basis. 2 presidential appointments shall be made from the following administrative departments: Cornell Police, Facilities Management, Environmental Health and Safety, Planning, Design and Construction, Students, and Academic Services and University Relations. 2 presidential appointments from the following academic departments: Civil and Environmental Engineering, City and Regional Planning, Natural Resources, Landscape Architecture. The academic appointees should be individuals with professional and technical expertise in transportation or a related field, and 1 presidential appointment from the Office of Budget and Financial Planning. Each are made by the president of the university upon recommendations of the vice president of facilities and campus services, and will serve 3-year terms on a staggered basis. 3 ex officio members shall be the director of transportation and health services, a liaison from transportation to
transportation hearing in the appeals board and the meeting time from the UA. The committee's charge is to provide a conduit for the community input regarding policies and services related to safe, comprehensive, economical, and efficient transportation programs. These include parking, transit circulation, pedestrian and motorist cyclist safety and education, and services that meet the transportation access needs for persons with disabilities. The committee shall make policy and program recommendations to the UA and the senior vice president. Furthermore, the committee shall review in consultation with the consultation of the campus planning committee all plans for alterations of or additions to roads, parking lots, pathways, and walkways on the Ithaca campus of the university. The committee shall report periodically to the UA.
Basically, we just, sorry, did you finish? Okay. We, TAC right now is fully staffed. They're ready to go. It's just we need someone to go there, make sure this meeting, the first meeting happens, make sure all the meetings happen. The GPSA really needs TAC to be operational right now, so we really do need someone who's, like, the Office of Assemblies will help. They'll help you get in touch with the listserv, make sure all of that helps, but we just need someone who will say, this is what the first meeting of TAC is going to be, this is, and get it started.
I could do it. This fellow's been on it, and I didn't know what the acronym was before I came here. So.
Oh, no, I've served my time. You have the torch and have someone else. You know what I mean?
Pass the car keys.
Yes.
Okay.
I'd be willing to do it. All right. I definitely know what you're getting here for.
Thank you. So, is there a second?
Second.
Great. Okay, so we can put you in touch with the Office of Assemblies, who will help you get in touch with the listserv, call the first meeting. We can also get you in touch with Janet and Mark in terms of the GPSA.
We have to
do oh, sorry. Okay. All in favor? Anyone opposed? Wait, did you count? Did you?
I'm trying.
Okay, hands up. Sorry.
Yeah. 11 in favor. Is there
any opposed?
Okay. Any abstain?
Any abstain?
There you go.
Okay, great. So, also, Janet and Mark will really look forward to being in touch with you in terms of TAC because they've kind of made started things rolling because GPSA. Janet and Mark Walsh, the GPSA, Graduate Professional School Assembly, because they've been working on stuff that needs TAC right now. That's one of the reasons why there's such a push right now.
Can you say their names more slowly?
It's Janet Bertesi. She's the president of the Graduate and Professional Students Association.
Uh-huh.
And Mike Walsh. He's the vice.
Great. Moving on to the next point, we want to discuss our other committees as well. We're great now that TAC is going, but also we want to get our other committees moving. And so if everyone could please look at this, especially the new members who aren't assigned to any committees right now, and if anyone's willing to chair this. Basically, you just have to go to these meetings, report back to us. Everything pretty much that is said for TAC holds true for all the other committees. So we need to get...
Does a member from the UA become the chair of that committee necessarily, or just a reporter in general? But he just became chair, not just a member. Is that because he's a UA member, or is that just because they also needed a chair?
I think the chairs of the codes and judicial committee are not members of the UA.
He just became chair.
He's the one calling the committee to convene, and he's making sure it happens. there are some of our committees where there are some of the committees where the university assembly has to call them to order and call them to ask.
Okay, that doesn't necessarily have to be the chair.
Earlier this year, there was a call for which committees do you want to be on, and what happened to that?
They should still stand, but it, to my knowledge, there hasn't been very much action with them. So that's why we put up.
Jules, if I might just interject, Our office is campaigning to have each of these committees meet at least once per semester. Even if there is no report, they at least convene a meeting of each committee one time per semester and then move on from there and meet on an as-needed basis from there or schedule regular meetings if need be.
Yeah.
So, Joe, right now, are you asking for people to volunteer to be chairs or members of each of these committees, or just a select number of committees?
If you are willing to, like, chair or become a member of one of the committees right now, then that would be great.
Would you just want to?
That'd be great.
I mean, I worked with the Multicultural Issues Committee already in the past. If that's cool, I also would be interested in working with the health service.
Okay.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I said I wanted to be part of, in some way, the Codes and Judicial Committee, but I'm not. So, I don't know where that stands. That was my opinion.
Because we don't want you.
No. not all of these committees need members, or even need chairs, and I'm not sure which does and which doesn't. The CJC certainly doesn't. I guess this one.
Yeah, we're a full.
You don't need any help.
We're full now. I have a suggestion. How about we get in an email of all the committees that we signed up for in the fall?
Okay.
So, A, it refreshes our memories. And B, if we see that we need to fill in other committees, that'll give us a point.
Okay. I'll send that out tomorrow then. If everyone could please look over this, though, that would be very helpful.
Yeah. So with the committees that I guess I just volunteer to either be member of or
chair, I don't know exactly what I heard. Can we be involved with? Can we get, can the office send us like if they already have established meeting times or who's on it so we can get in contact with these people? David, is that the right? Whatever you signed up for last semester. And the final thing we want to talk about is we discussed this last semester was approaching academic integrity for this year. So we just kind of want to talk about, do we want to still continue that and start moving forward with that idea for this coming semester, or do we want to try to put that off till next year or not approach that, just kind of those ideas. So anyone have any ideas, comments?
Wasn't that Dean Wilcox? Under their purview as faculty, but didn't he want input from us?
Yeah, he wanted to step when he asked last year when he came to me and Alex met with him. He was asking for us to work with him to look into it and make recommendations that he could bring back to the faculty center for their information and do a Columbus of all the information in the UA. The faculty center, from my understanding last time I talked to him, was that there was sort of certain ownership over academic integrity to keep it away from CJC and the general university code. And so he wanted our input to see if there's any way to mesh the two or just to look at it from his perspective.
Yeah.
Currently, the faculty has. This is a year and a half ago with the conversation that I've had with Charlie, me and Alex. Different times, and we also met with the person in charge of the academic integrity for each of the different colleges, because right now all of the colleges have separate academic integrity policies. And so he's trying to think of a way that we could combine it, and because he thinks it doesn't affect just faculty senate, he wanted university assembly to get involved with it so we could see ways of combining it among the colleges as well as among the different constituencies that we have.
The goal being to establish a university-wide.
But the Faculty Senate, I believe it was last year, did pass on a motion to the effect that if a student is was say caught cheating, that they couldn't just withdraw from the course and call it even. Right? And so that didn't come anywhere near this committee. It was certainly owned by the Faculty Senate and passed by the Faculty Senate.
Okay.
think it was pretty easy to for the university life education policy to because I'm a
Oh, okay. Is that the set? Is that the set of education policy?
No, no. The university, the university-wide education policy, and we talked about the education.
Okay, but the fact is, it was the Senate that it is an academic integrity issue, and the Senate took care of it entirely, and none of it came to me.
On recommendation from the university-wide.
Yes. Okay. That's. But I'm just wondering how to separate out things that should come through us for consideration or discussion and things that should. And that was one. That
I have no idea, but in EPC we thought we were beginning to have conversations about the importance of the area where we do lag other universities in having a pretty specific and anyway, a well spelled out, well founded code of academic integrity that would encourage a lot of voluntary compliance and make it clear to students that this is serious business and to reconcile, you know, to have it be university wide rather than college specific.
Right. And that particularly when I think in the arts college, it was already a rule, but it wasn't a rule university wide. So anyway.
Well, that would be a piece of the university. Formalization of
right.
One small piece.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure what you're seeking, but if you're seeking like a point person or a liaison to work with Charles Walcott or whatever, I'd be willing to do that.
Okay.
But
what,
I don't know what you're asking.
What I was just wanting to find out what if we want if this is something we wanted to look into, if this is something we want to keep going forward with, because one of our members last month, Katie Whalen. She was very interested. She started going to meetings with Dean Walcott, and she met with a lot of other people on campus about talking about academic integrity and talking about an honor code and all of those types of things. So this is just something, like, the question is, do we want to go forward?
I do, and I don't know about other people, but once again, if you need a person, I'd be willing to do that.
How would we, like, do you get, sorry. I'm
is there any kind of push from Dean Walcott or from the administration in order to start it again, or is this something that
this is just something that one of our members took interest in and decided that maybe we would see how the university assembly felt about it. And it was put, I think it was put before us a couple years ago.
Sure.
Talking about, yeah.
Right.
And so it's just coming back to that. It got lost when we switched presidents and that type of thing.
It actually it came up out of some discussions where the intro bio professors came to us and said, we have a problem with all the people that are making cheating or making excuses that so many grandmothers died a semester and missing tests and various things. And within the discussion, we started, it's all the problems sort of came down to honesty and integrity. And we started discussing things like honor codes and the spectrum from, you know, saying the golden rule versus all the statutory laws that you can't do this, you can't do this, and how to strike some balance. And I thought they were wonderful discussions. And Henry Grandison had collected all kinds of honor code stuff from different universities, and so it was left hanging. And I think there was a lot of information there and some interest, and it'd be nice for Leon to be a point person and make sure that this moves.
I think it's a really important issue, and I think a lot of people around campus have been talking about this for a long time. And, I don't know how it changed at UCC. It might have come from the people that you mentioned, but we said for 10 letters, and then Charlie said to us, well, there's another source of initiative, and so we just need to do this in the way we do. I don't know if that meant this body or what.
But you can't join this body.
Didn't think about it.
I also collected honor codes from other schools, and also ABC a few years ago did a special on cheating in American high schools and colleges, and I had to film myself. But it's sort of like self.
But are all
questions of authority within the decision making process in the university disambiguous? It seems like this body doesn't know what authority it has, and then there are topics, core topics like academic integrity that seem to be just floating around. Is there someone on campus who actually is there a constitution of the somehow that sets up this a hierarchy and a division of labor and of authority?
The UA charter should tell us what we're responsible for and what we're not. But my understanding is some things we are, but some things we do have to pass on to the president, and he can ask or she can ask or not if they see fit.
And but for example, this is a concrete example where it would be nice if we could go and ask: Does it make sense for us to consider this, or are we simply going to be short-circuited next year? The faculty senate actually. Find out the faculty senate has full authority on this.
Well, to half answer your question, when we were discussing this, Jeff Lehman was president, and he came in. He was part of the discussions, and I think we could say we assumed authority, and he didn't question it.
And
I think in terms of these various committees. If we assume authority, it may work, and if we don't, it definitely won't work.
I have a possible clarification. In the course of the discussion of the code and campus code of conduct, there was some discussion of whether or not the code of academic integrity should be folded into the campus code of conduct, and some. Various opinions percolated around about that. It was discussed here briefly in the first meeting that I came to about the campus code of regulations. Anytime that question has been discussed in front of people who have been involved in these issues in the past, faculty members have said, no, that's the prerogative entirely of the faculty. That is the Code of Academic Integrity. If you look at the Code of Academic Integrity, which is a part of the booklet called Policy Notebook for the Cornell Community, the Code of Academic Integrity is prepared by the Office of the Dean of Faculty. And I think in the Senate there's been some discussion when we brought up the question of the Campus Code of Conduct and its relationship to the Code of Academic Integrity. It was made clear by several senators, though there wasn't a resolution to that effect, that the Code of Academic Integrity was entirely the purview of the faculty, and that the Campus Code of Conduct, on the other hand, was a broader issue, and therefore the University Assembly was in the other state. Now, I suggest that there isn't a problem of a lack of focus. There is a focus. It's just that one has to, the person responsible for doing it. It's just that the assembly has to decide how much it wants to participate in that, send a representative to the Office of the Dean of Faculty, and get together a process for doing it. That's my suggestion from my experience.
One question.
Do
people who are accused of academic neglect? Do they wind up with the same position of administrator that enforces the code?
No, it's a different system, and it's run entirely through the Office of Academic Integrity.
But it does have students.
Oh, yes, it has students on
it. It's
a hearing board that's run separately from the judicial administrator's office. And that's all set up with, I don't know any of the same details that I do about the code of conduct, but there's a separate system for that. So all I'm suggesting is that this is something that runs through the Dean of Faculty's office, and so if you guys want to get involved, you could send a representative and work out, as you were talking about, some kind of process through which you can engage in that form of it. I know the Dean of Faculty is interested in it, because he did mention that to me when we were talking about code of of the assignment.
I'd say if it ever gets that far, there's a machinery, but I have a feeling that 80% of the cases never get up into the machinery.
Oh.
And whether that particular fact is consistent throughout the colleges, I really doubt, because
that's one of the problems with that.
Yeah.
So that's a sign of our sort of lackadaisical attitude about it. In fact,
feeling
in my department, I know, that they aren't backed up, and so you find that all the trouble is
right.
There's also like, I was involved in one of these cases last year. There's a primary hearing where, apparently, from what I understand, you set up the primary hearing for like a week after the offense happened, and the students have a week to think about how horrible their life might be. So they end up saying, "Okay, I did it," and there's some smaller amount of there isn't a whole process that goes through it. It sort of stops, and the faculty, the student, and an independent person that's there makes a decision. This is a fair thing that we all can agree on, and I thought that actually worked out well in the one case that I was involved in without going through the whole. I mean, that was part of the machinery, that primary hearing.
In terms of the campus code of conduct, if a student is caught shoplifting in the bookstore, they go to JA, right? Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. If a staff member is caught shoplifting, where do they go?
Walmart.
Downtown. And if a faculty is caught shoplifting, where do they go? Do they go to all different places?
Do you want to deal with this now? I mean, that's going back to the social judicial, I'm sorry. But if a staff member is caught shoplifting on campus and it doesn't have to do with his or her work, it goes to the judicial administrator. If it has to do with his or her work, it reflects their work, then it goes to his or her supervisor. It depends if they're working at the campus store when they take a book.
I see.
If a faculty member does that, it also now, this is all affected in some ways by whether it's prosecuted downtown as well, because it's in the civil system. If it's prosecuted downtown, it may well be also JA, if faculty, staff, or student, but the case may be deferred from JA until it's resolved in
And in terms of that process, that's not a consistent process, because supervisors are not acting consistently across the university. So
now you're talking about on the work violations.
Yep, exactly. And that is a cause of worry of a number of employees that I have talked to. And they're reluctant, as I told you earlier.
I hope if they come to the forum, they will come and they will tell.
Boy, there is no way that they're going to stand up with a microphone and have their say at that forum. Because they feel that they will be punished at work.
We accept anonymous comments.
And that's what I told them.
We brought this up with Mary Opperman. I brought up the question of not only are we talking about not giving over work-related violations to supervisors. We're actually, some people suggesting that work-related violations should be folded into the campus judicial system, and that would be a major development. In other words, work-related staff and faculty violations would then be adjudicated through the campus judicial system rather than through work.
Just to follow up, if the alleged violation is in fact the supervisor, you have yourself a real problem.
Yeah.
And that is the problem. I'll tell you, that is the problem.
Well, I brought that up to you. It's not on the table right now.
Did you mean the social education section unit representative? Well, probably not. It sounds like the only thing that they do.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I believe.
should be employee
change is in
inappropriate, and that the current system was working, that the current system needed to needed to process some of the things and make some affirmations, and then I can't answer what we're going to come up with as far as all the extensive changes are concerned, but I expect it would be something like, you know, let's try out things piece by piece and see what they're like over a period of a year, 2 years, 3 years, and see whether they're all feasible or necessary. So,
even if you don't think it's built, even if you don't think it's a particular area,
well,
that's problematic. Try out.
I think, 3 years ago, we initiated the Codes and Justice Committee at the request, well, maybe it's concert with UA, initiated a process to reframe the code slightly because it perceived some problems with current code. So 3 years, even before this, we had an interest in doing some kind of revamping of the code so that it was clearer, more direct. But we, first of all, as you said, it takes a lot of time. We didn't have the support. We didn't have any support services. We met several times, and we realized that we're not going to be able to do this effectively. We put a couple of changes in front of UA, and UA dismissed them, actually, out of hand. So our morale in terms of doing extensive revisions was undermined. I think it's unfair to say that this is entirely the work of the idea to change the code around a bit is entirely the work of the administration. There's also that impetus to try and streamline it. We've had a proposal, for example, to fuse together Title III and Title II because they have a lot of duplication, a lot of extra language, and that may well come up. That's an extensive revision. One thing that the one thing that our chair, co-chair, asked for is that we might have a 3-day retreat at the Codes and Judicial Committee meeting in Belize or something like that, and do a thorough rewrite over that period of time of certain members and do that right. Okay.
I think the Krauss report was not written entirely at the impetus of the administration in the sense that they came to the UA, and we knew this was about, but when the actual report appeared, people said, "Gulp." Yeah, that was the thing. It wasn't a surprise that the report was being done. It was what the report said was the problem. So,
and in the context of
yeah, sure. But in terms of the Krauss report, is the CJC really working as a only in response to the areas covered by the Krauss report? Because the Krauss report basically throws out faculty and employees in the first page and says, "Oh, actually, we're not talking about them. They have their own system." Am I getting that wrong, kind of? Because it doesn't seem like they're talking about faculty.
Well, you know, one of the things we have to think about somewhere along the line is that 90% of the cases that the JA's office deals with under the code are students. And so one of the things this is trying to do is find an efficient way of handling student complaints. Not student complaints of major felonies, but you know, problems like drinking, underage drinking, and all these other things, which the student activities, the student's office thinks they can handle, maybe, you know, in ways that are better than going to the campus judicial system. So we wrestle with that side of things too. But going back to your initial point, no, the CJC does not assume that that's a given, and so that's all why right. The first issue on the table is
yes.
Who does
it go. Yeah, but the procedures that are involved following on who it applies to are of concern, I think.
Yes, well, I think the general drift of things, I mean, you can't write the report before we get all the opinion in, the general drift of things, however, is that the system should apply, the code itself applies to everybody on campus, including administrators, and that was affirmed by the administrative members of the committee when they were of the administrators when they were at the committee, which of course covers everybody up to the president. So the code covers everybody. And the judicial administrator challenge of thinking about how, whether or not the press report is at all feasible in separating the step back from the step out. And the fifth of things is, now that it doesn't appear to be, as both people said, the Mary Opperman and the Office of Poly Administration said, you can't imagine how that could possibly be affected. So,
well, universality is a nice thing, but I wonder if checking out the faculty and staff is going to tend to co-opt the faculty and let them say, oh, well, it doesn't apply to us, if we'll have our separate room-like system, do whatever you want to do.
We're actually out of time, so if someone wants to make a motion to extend the meeting for a few more minutes, that's fine, or make a motion to adjourn. One or the other.
I'll make a motion to extend the meeting for 10 minutes.
Having raised that interesting question about the co-optation, I have to go.
There's a comment here. There was a comment here by Susan Powell on cases referred to GAA involving staff members, faculty, administrators.
Dan, you need to talk louder, please.
There's a comment here that's worth reading, I think. I mean, we're about to read it before we take this up again. It's really interesting insight into this and what happened in the past when we tried exactly what the Krauss report suggests, collecting debt from staff, faculty, and administrators. How that works.
So the nice thing here is that when the comments come in, we can bring it before the UA, and the UA will be able to judge them. I suggest that everybody read that packet of comments, especially the first three sections, but also the all of them. They all have a lot of luck to offer to the debate.
I guess we're adjourned.
So all fair.
What, did you get over there?
Yeah.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.